Well, when it rains, it pours. I mean, for a few days here, it was just yours truly. And now not only is Stephanie back, welcome back to the Midday.
Thank you.
But we have two guests.
We have Paul Rowe, who is a professor of music at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a singer, a very talented baritone, and also the co-founder of the Madison Early Music Festival. And Grant Herod, who is here in town as a performer with the Madison Early Music Festival. He is a lutenist and Renaissance wind player, a performer with Pifaro, and he's on the faculty here with the Madison Early Music Festival. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
These early music festivals, which are annual events, are always opening experience, which is to say there's so much variety. When you say early music, it's such a catch-all, and there are just so many things that I think are particularly inclined to make people tap their toes when they hear it. You know, I mean, there's such great variety there. And the biggest names in early music come right here to Wisconsin to perform during this festival.
That's right. Yeah, we've been doing this. This is our 10th season.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's really taken off. It's been growing and growing.
And it's been a really fun year so far. We've had three concerts, one out in Edgerton and then two here on the campus at Mills Hall.
Do you specialize in the toe-tapping music, the peasant music, or the court music, the church music?
Well, I think we have all of that various times. The Saturday night concert with Pifaro had all kinds of dance music with all their various instruments. They always play, I don't know how many instruments were on stage, 60 maybe, 50?
Probably something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see the people switching instruments all the time. And then last night we had Newbury Consort did a concert with all Landini, Francesco Landini, which was a little bit earlier from the 14th century, and had sacred music as well as secular music and Latin and French and Italian, all kinds of different things.
It's inclined to give you the perhaps mistaken impression that people back then had more fun than we do now.
Maybe so. I think they were a little closer to it. Yeah, that's for sure.
One of the ensembles is performing on Friday. We've heard from a little bit in the last half hour, in fact, the Venere Lute Quartet. They do some interesting work, some things that you hear occasionally for, well, what shall we say, early Baroque ensembles, for example. I'm thinking of the Henry Purcell that we heard earlier. But this is all lutes. And we'll hear a little bit of what they've done with some lute music, actually written originally for lute by Nicolas Vaillant. And then we'll actually hear some live things right here.
That's right. We have some instruments in the studio.
Sample of what the Venere Lute Quartet does. They have four different kinds of lutes, we're told by our resident lutenist here. And well, what do you have there?
I'm holding the tenor size of lute, which is sort of what they call in England the mean lute, or sort of average size lute. And there was a slightly smaller lute called the smaller mean lute, which is sort of an alto lute, tuned a step higher.
Small but even meaner.
Right. Yeah. And then there was the treble lute, which was tuned a fourth above those, and then also a large bass lute that was tuned two octaves below the small treble lute. So a whole family of lutes with about probably about 40 strings or 50 strings to tune for every time you want to play a piece.
How many strings or courses of strings do you have on that?
On this lute, it has 8 courses arranged, or 15 strings arranged in 8 courses. So most of them are double strings.
Okay, now why is the neck bent?
The neck is bent back at an angle, and nobody knows why, except if it wasn't, it wouldn't fit in the case.
I like that answer. The other thing you notice about a lute is, unlike a guitar, the sound hole is very intricately embellished and almost closed. How does that affect the sound of it?
It actually doesn't affect the sound at all. And the decorated, what we call the rosette, set inside the sound hole is actually carved right out of the top of the instrument. And it sort of displays the luthier's skill in carving.
I would say.
And if you mess up, you have to start all over again.
Yeah. So this is obviously a lute or an instrument that's striking to look at as well as to hear. But what does it sound like, and how do you play that thing?
One plucks the lute with your fingers. Very much the way a classical guitar is played. But because of the double stringing and the light construction, you have to develop a little more of a delicate touch to the lute. And usually we don't use our fingernails when we play Renaissance music, because it's a more fleshy, plummy sound that the lute is designed to project.
What kinds of strings do you have?
Originally, of course, the strings were made of sheep gut. And so we have to say that some animals were harmed in the production of Renaissance music. Venere string quartet or lute quartet probably plays on a fair amount of gut strings. But when lutenists travel around, it's a little easier to use synthetic strings. So I have a combination of gut and some nylon strings, and even some made of this carbon fiber fishing line.
So those strings, and I think Stephanie referred to them as courses, the way they're paired together like that. Is this a matter of synthetic vibration? When you play one, the other responds, or are you actually touching them all when you play?
You basically play them all. There aren't any that are just sort of freestanding. But the lute is built solely for resonance, and so the more in tune it is to itself, the more it picks up the vibrations and reverberations from the other open strings just sort of naturally.
Well, now, you know, you mentioned it's hard enough or a consonant enough business to tune the lute before each song, but when you're playing in an ensemble, doesn't everybody just end up tuning constantly to each other?
Well, yes. I mean, it can.
There are lots of jokes about that.
Theoretically.
Yes.
It's only worse with harps.
Yeah. In fact, the earliest lute joke about tuning that I've seen comes from Shakespeare in The Taming of the Shrew. Someone tries to give a lute lesson to Bianca, the sort of nice sister, and his friend makes fun of him, saying that, you know, he says, "When I'm done tuning my lute, I can come and talk to you, Bianca." And his friend says, "That will be never." So even in the Renaissance, tuning the lute was a problem.
Yeah. Well, how about a tune?
Here's a little lute piece. Associated with Shakespeare's clown, in fact, Will Kemp, and it's called Kemp's Jig.
Think of John Dowland when I think of the lute. Kemp's Jig, is that a Dowland or is that somebody else?
It is actually by John Dowland, yes. And we don't know if Dowland had anything to do with Shakespeare's company, but Will Kemp was a musician himself and was known as a Morris dancer, in fact. He danced the traditional Morris, and so maybe he used that tune to play while he danced the Morris.
And that was performed by Grant Herod, who is here in Wisconsin as part of the Madison Early Music Festival, performed with Pifaro earlier this week, and will be performing with Quicksilver tomorrow evening at 7:30 as part of that festival. And Grant, not only do you perform on the lute, but you also play recorder and bagpipes and lots of wind instruments.
That's true. As Paul mentioned, in Pifaro we tend to have a whole smorgasbord of Renaissance instruments, and part of the Renaissance musician's job was to specialize on maybe one or two instruments, but be fairly fluent on several, especially the wind instruments. And so I have a recorder with me of the type that we played on Saturday night. This is the soprano size, and the recorder everyone is familiar with, but maybe people don't know that it's called a flute in every language except English. In English, it's called the recorder, which was, and to record in the Renaissance meant to sound like a bird.
Well, in English, we think of the flute as being, I guess, usually the transverse flute that is played perpendicular to your mouth,
yeah.
Whereas the recorder is a straight shot out.
Yeah. But the word flute was used for this instrument. In fact, back to Shakespeare again, there's actually a recorder lesson in Hamlet. Hamlet is asking Rosencrantz or Guildenstern, I can't remember, one of them.
They're both dead.
to play this recorder, and he answers, I have not the skill. And Hamlet says, oh, it's quite simple. You just blow in one end and stop the holes with your fingers. In the same way that you are playing upon me, he says.
And the recorder is another one of those instruments that had came in a family, right? So there were large recorders. There's one recorder that's 5 feet tall, probably, the bass recorder.
Six feet.
Would you have to prop that on something to play it?
Yes. Well, you know, you hold it up on a stick, yeah.
Yeah, it has a little thing, a little supporter at the bottom. Yeah.
Right.
And all the way to smaller than that, there are, you know, you get down to sopranino.
We might mention that in the Quicksilver concert on Tuesday, it will feature Marion Verbruggen, who's an international star of the recorder.
It has been for 30, 40 years.
We play her music often and have for many years, yes.
And just a fantastic performer.
Very dynamic to watch on stage, that's certain. Paul, you've been teaching voice for a long time, and you organized this festival as an outgrowth of your love for early music. What kinds of vocal involvement is there this week?
There's all kinds of different singers here. Ellen Hargis is here, Judy Malafronte. My co-artistic director, Cheryl Benzman-Rowe, is also singing. She's also my wife. so you hear all kinds of different singers. And we have on the All Festival concert, that will feature a large choir. And that's actually going to be an interesting concert. It's based on a bunch of interludes between a play that was performed at a giant wedding in 1589. That was a Medici family wedding in Florence. And actually, Grant is the editor.
A big, fat Medici family wedding.
That's right, yeah.
Sounds quite rich.
Oh, yes.
I mean, literally, from an oral standpoint.
Well, that's another aspect of this early music. It's still being discovered, rediscovered.
Yeah, and these intermedi are famous for the theme of it as well, which is invoking the power of the music of the spheres and the power of music, even the music that we play here on Earth, to sort of resonate with the motions of the spheres. And it's a very grand concept, manifest in extremely grand and moving music for single choir, double choir, triple choir, and even one piece involving seven choirs of singers and instruments.
Wow.
Yeah. And this, it actually goes along with our whole theme this week, which is combining astronomy and music and thinking about the spheres and the heavens.
Yeah.
This is actually the International Year of Astronomy. It's the 400th anniversary of the telescope and Galileo's first looking at the stars. And
today's his birthday.
Yeah, and today is Galileo's
birthday.
Is today
his birthday?
Yes. So all these things have come together magically.
I would say that. Well, speaking of coming together, we have here another fairly recent release, very new to us, in fact, featuring not just the Ensemble Pifero, but also the Concord Ensemble.
Yes, who were here 7, 8 years ago?
Yes.
Something
and
like that, long time ago.
And the countertenor in the Concord is the all-festival conductor, Paul Flight.
Paul Flight.
And here's just a bit of it.
Thank you.
from a combined effort between two ensembles, Piffero and the Concord Ensemble, two of the foremost early music ensembles around here.
Both of whom have appeared at the Madison Early Music Festival, which is going on in Madison this week. You can find information at madisonearlymusic.org. And we have guests Paul Rowe and Grant Herod in the studio with us from the Early Music Festival.
And they've agreed to actually perform a
duet.
Yeah, it's a duet.
Well, this is actually a lute song that was first published in 1602 in a volume called The New Music, Le Nuove Musiche, by Caccini, by Giulio Caccini. And this is the most famous song from this collection. It's called Amarilli Mia Bella, and should be familiar to many people, I think. So I'd like to read the text first. It says, "My lovely Amaryllis, O heart's desire, do you not believe you are my love? Believe it. And if doubts assail, take this arrow of mine, open my breast, and you shall see written on my heart, Amaryllis is my love."
But don't try that trick at home.
Right.
Amarilli mia bella, non credi o del mio cor dolce desio d'esser tu l'amor mio, credilo pur. E se di morta sale, prendi questo mio strale, aprimi il petto e vedrai scritto il cuore. Amarilli, il mio amore, credilo pure, e se ti morta sale, prendi questo mio strale. Aprimi il petto e vedrai scritto il cuore. Amarilli, 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 è il mio amore. Amarilli, il mio amore.
And he performed it sitting too. Which is not something singers usually do, but it's quite impressive to see that.
Well, I was sitting, of course.
Right.
It was only polite.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. A lovely song from the Renaissance.
Yes, from the beginning of the Baroque, kind of in the transition.
Amarilli by Giulio Caccini. Very well known to many voice students.
That's right. Anthologized in many different ways.
And justly so.
That was sung by Paul Rowe, who is the co-founder of the Madison Early Music Festival and professor of music at the UW-Madison. And we also heard lutenist Grant Herod, who is a member of Piffero and will also be performing with Quicksilver tomorrow night as part of the Madison Early Music Festival. That festival will continue this week with the faculty concert, which is entitled Celestial Seasonings, in keeping with the program. Hmm. And they're,
That with a grain of salt.
Right.
The Venere Lute Quartet will be featuring music of Vincenzo Galilei on Friday night. And then what is the concert on Saturday going to? You said the
it's
wedding.
It's the intermedi from this wedding. And the name of the play is Le Pellegrini. And that's the that's what the intermedi are called. They have various different subjects, all mostly relating to the spheres. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, to celestial music of some
kind. Right, celestial music and praising the Medici.
Well,
you can find information about the Madison Early Music Festival at madisonearlymusic.org.
A pleasure having you with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. It was a great pleasure.